listening to The Secrets of Doctor Who.
I'm a doctor. I've lived for over 2,000 years.
I have Scottish. I can complain about things.
Shush.
Welcome back to another episode of The Secrets of Doctor Who. I'm Father Roderick, and today we will finally be discussing the Christmas special. It is an old tradition that every season around Christmas time there is a special episode. Sometimes it's chronologically tied in with the rest of the season. Sometimes it's completely independent. And the title of the episode that we're going to discuss is Last Christmas.
Moron! Numbskull! Elf! That's racist! Of course it's not racist. You are an elf.
Joining me, three of our panel members, Stephanie.
Hello.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
And also Jimmy Akin.
Merry Christmas, Father.
Merry Christmas to you too. And Dom Bettinelli.
Merry Christmas, Father.
Have you been paying attention?
Rudolph. Did you see the nose?
The North Pole. Come on, with stripes.
This is
a dream.
So how do we know that we're actually doing this recording and we're not dreaming?
I think we might want to have a talk with Rene Descartes.
I podcast, therefore I am. All right, well, let's refresh our memories and listen to the sound of the trailer for this Christmas special of Doctor Who.
I'm back. I've got inside the TARDIS.
Come on, it's Christmas, the North Pole. Who are you gonna call?
What seems to be the problem?
Doctor Who, Christmas Day at 6:15 on BBC One.
Well, we took our time to get together and discuss this episode, and one of the reasons might be that we're this is a Catholic podcast, and Catholics usually spend a lot of time celebrating Christmas. It's not over the day after Christmas, but it actually ends this past weekend. We had the baptism of the Lord, and that is, I think, officially, liturgically at least, the end of the Christmas season. So that would be a fitting moment to discuss this episode. Jimmy, can you give us a brief recap of what happened in this memorable episode?
Sure. In this episode, Clara Oswald wakes up having broken up with the Doctor in the previous season finale, and she wakes up hearing Santa Claus and some elves on her roof, and she goes out and investigates, and it does indeed appear to be Santa Claus and some elves. The Doctor then shows up in the TARDIS, and he's very agitated about the situation. Something seems to be wrong, and he tells her to get in the TARDIS, and he's going to take her away because apparently something's wrong. There's a little bit of sparring verbally between the Doctor and Santa Claus, and the Doctor then gets in the TARDIS, and we are taken to an Arctic base where there are some scientists who have apparently been withstanding a base siege. Apparently four of their fellow scientists have these facehugger-like crab things that are stuck to their faces, and they're kind of out of the action or alternately in zombie mode and are quite menacing. And they, in fact, start menacing the scientists and the Doctor and Clara until Santa Claus shows up and rescues them. The scientists are a little nonspecific about what they're actually doing up there. They all just tell the Doctor that it's a long story. And the Doctor realizes that the creatures in this episode are something called dream crabs. And dream crabs hang on your head and eat your brain. But while they're doing that, they also give you pleasant dreams to keep you distracted from the fact that your brain is being eaten. before too long, Clara falls victim to one of the dream crabs, and she has a dream about Danny Pink. Now, just before she goes into this dream, she admitted to the Doctor that she lied about Danny Pink being alive. She let the Doctor think that Danny Pink was still alive so he could go and be on Gallifrey without having to worry about her. And he admits that he lied about finding Gallifrey so that she could be happy with Danny Pink. So we have kind of an echo of the O. Henry story, The Gift of the Magi. Anyway, once she's under the influence of the Dream Crab, she's having these dreams about Danny Pink still being alive. And we have some really scary, effective imagery when she starts seeing chalkboards with warnings that she's dying on them that suddenly appear. And these are the Doctor attempting to communicate with her. But when the chalkboards don't work, he himself submits to a Dream Crab so that he can telepathically join her in her dream. The Dream Crabs apparently communicate telepathically. He gets her to agree to wake up, at which point, with Dream Danny's help, and when that happens, the Dream Crabs on them disintegrate. Apparently, they disintegrate if they're pulled off prematurely or if you wake up prematurely. Then the Doctor realizes that they actually haven't woken up and they're all inside of a dream. And so at this point, the movie, which has been very much like the movie Alien, is now becoming very much like the movie Inception. And the Doctor shows the scientists that they are still dreaming by having them look at copies of the station manual and all open to the same page and tell them the first word on the page. And each one has their imagination manufacture a different word, so they know they're all dreaming. They attempt to wake up, and they attempt to escape through the TARDIS, but other subconscious dream images from them stop them and menace them, and they end up imploring Santa Claus, realizing he's a kind of subconscious dream mechanism, to rescue them, which he does. And so they discover that they're not actually scientists. They're probably just ordinary people dreaming about being scientists. They may be in different places in the world. They may even be in different times. And so as Santa flies them through the sky on his sleigh, they begin to wake up, and we see indeed that they're different people in different times. And the last to wake up is Clara. And as she is saying goodbye to Santa Claus, we then cut to where she is in the real world. The Doctor finds her, and she's got a dream crab on her face, and he takes the dream crab off, and she is an elderly woman. And it's apparently been 62 years since they last saw each other. He's alarmed by this situation, but Santa Claus shows up, and he realizes it's, again, still a dream, and Santa helps him wake up, at which point the Doctor rushes to the real Clara's side, takes the dream crab off of her, and she's a young woman. So they weren't really displaced in time in that way. The Doctor then begs Clara to agree to continue traveling with him through the universe, and she agrees, and it's a very heartwarming moment. The two of them go out in the snow to get in the TARDIS. The Doctor comments that he's gotten a second chance with her, and second chances are something he rarely gets, and he doesn't even know who to thank. And as the TARDIS fades out, we see through Clara's window that there is a tangerine sitting there, a tangerine being a British Christmas custom that is linked to Santa Claus in this episode, and the implication is the Doctor has Santa Claus to thank.
Yes, and apparently no one really likes tangerines.
Yeah.
You know, an interesting thing about the tangerines is I looked it up, and it goes back to a 12th century order of French nuns who gave tangerines and other treats to orphan children at Christmas.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I thought that was a neat thing. And then it's over time, it has become associated with Santa because they end up in the pretty much the toe of the Christmas stocking, so to speak.
Yeah.
There's also a link to Saint Nicholas, at least the mythology around Saint Nicholas, who was a real person who existed, actually a pretty important saint.
He was a bishop from Turkey.
Yes, played a role, or at least modern day Turkey, He was known, among other things, for his care for the poor. And one of the stories that they tell about him is that there was a guy who lived with his daughters in extreme poverty, and he was thinking of selling his daughters into prostitution. And when St. Nicholas heard about that, he actually went to the house of the man and threw in golden coins. And in a lot of the medieval imagery of St. Nicholas, those coins are, you know, gradually transforming into kind of balls of gold. And there is a theory that says that actually that's where the tangerine association comes from. It's kind of referring to those gifts that he threw through the window so that these daughters could be saved. So it's I always love these, you know, these backgrounds, and it's almost like an onion where you go to the core, you know, what truly happened, and then how did these stories just impact the imagery and everything, and then ultimately end up in Doctor Who. Let me ask my first question that I always ask. How did you like this episode, Stephanie?
Well, I liked it pretty well. And the first time I watched it was Christmas night, and I wasn't quite sure what to make out of it at that point. There was a lot of stuff going on, and it seemed like it was borrowing from too many other things that have happened before. And so I was kind of mediocre on that episode, and then I just watched it again last week because I thought we were going to record last week. And I liked it more, and as I've thought about it more and more, I've liked it more and more. So I think my rating has gone up after I have thought about it for a while.
What was your favorite moment?
Well, before the very, very end, when there was like two endings to the episode in which Clara could have very easily left the show without any problem. And so if it ended there, I would have been very okay with that because she'd had a long run. And so just seeing, even though it was a dream, seeing Clara in the older face and how she's been impacted by the doctor being gone for so long, I really liked that. Even though it ended up not being real. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but I like that moment.
Good. Dom, you wrote that you've seen this episode at least four times. Did you like it that much?
Well, I liked it fine. I watched it once because I was impatient and couldn't wait for my wife. And then I watched it again with her.
Uh-huh.
And then I watched it last Friday, Sunday, in the anticipation of taping the show last week. And then I watched it again last night because I had to, you know, have it fresh in my mind. So I know this episode front and back. I could quote dialogue now. But I did enjoy it. It had a great mix of humor, the typical excitement. We can get into some of the specifics as we go, but you know, I liked the Doctor and Clara's relationship, how we resolved what had come at the end of Series 8 and previewed what we're going to see coming forward and how it changed in this episode, I think. Mm-hmm. It changed a lot, and I think in ways that a lot of fans were complaining the way it was, and I think it's going to be better and different now. I think Stephen Moffat, the producer and writer, I think his real strength is in snappy dialogue. And yeah. that was on display here. I mean, there was some great dialogue, great interaction between the Doctor and Santa.
The elves. they were hilarious. Elves,
I mean, it was just great. The interview, we'll get into that, Shona interviewing them, was so fantastic. But one of the things that would, like, a sort of an overarching thing is one of the things that Moffat does is he tells the audience exactly what he's doing. But you have to be able to read between the lines to see it. And over again throughout this episode, he told us exactly what he was doing. And in various ways, and as we go through it, I'll kind of try to highlight some of them, but then when we get to last Christmas and Clara as being elderly, that's where he kind of flipped things on us, and I said, no, that's not what last Christmas really means, is it? And I would have been devastated because I really like Clara. I think she's the best companion, perhaps even more so than Amy. I really liked Amy Pond, but I really enjoy Clara's relationship with the Doctor here. And so just as everything progressed, I liked what they did with Danny. I mean, it just was such a good episode. I really felt like it was a good self-contained episode.
Excellent. What about you, Jimmy?
I really liked it. We've had Christmas specials on Doctor Who ever since the 2005 relaunch. They didn't have them in the old days, although The Doctor did once break the fourth wall at Christmas time to wish the audience Merry Christmas during an ordinary weekly serial. But since the advent of the new series, we've had the Christmas specials, and I thought this was the second best of all of them. I think the best one was A Christmas Carol, which was obviously based on Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. Mm-hmm. That was one of the Matt Smith's episodes, and I think that was the best of all of them. I think this is a close second. I really liked this. If I gave A Christmas Carol a 10, I would probably give this an 8 or a 9.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like this one a lot better than the last year's Christmas special with the snowman.
Yeah, the snowman was not great, and the one before that, which was the one based on The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, was also not great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, indeed. What I really liked about this one was the kind of the Inception storytelling, where you're never sure that you're already, you know, at the end of the story, that there might be another layer, and then how can you tell? And that every time that they use,
They even play that right to the end, because if you now in Inception, and this is not a spoiler for people who haven't seen Inception, because in that movie they tell you very early on that this movie is about nested dreams.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not a spoiler. But at the end of Inception, there is a shot focused on a particular object.
Yes.
And the significance of that object is it tells you this may be a dream,
mm-hmm.
but
indeed.
Maybe not.
Indeed.
And I think that they're deliberately echoing that with the shot of the tangerine at the end of this episode, because heretofore, Santa Claus's presence has always indicated a dream.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what they're really doing there, they're not setting us up for some future sequel, you know, where it turns out this was all a dream. What they're just doing is playing with reality and the fact this is a television show and Santa Claus can still be real somehow, just as real as the Doctor, but they're leaving it deliberately ambiguous.
Well, and then there are actually two ways to explain this. Like, either it is a dream, or the tangerine is truly there, and it might even have been Father Christmas who put it there, because there has been a mention of Father Christmas, I think, in one of the earlier Christmas specials with Matt.
In A Christmas Carol, the 11th Doctor shows a picture of him and Santa Claus and Albert Einstein and says that Santa Claus's real name is Jeff.
Right. which he doesn't use in this episode.
Yeah.
But so in, let's say, in the contained universe of Doctor Who, that tangerine might have been placed there by the real Father Christmas, the real within the reality of Doctor Who. But I love the opening. I thought it was so bold to really put the sleigh, the Father Christmas in the archetypical portrayal. He is the Coca-Cola Father Christmas, the elves and everything. I love that, and even the kind of the cultural differences with him doing the ho 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 and the Santa Claus, and then the Brits, of course, usually use Father Christmas. I'm not sure if everyone uses that, but I think that's kind of the common name for Santa Claus. Mm-hmm. And so the last question that I had was, of course, how does all this imagery get inside the Doctor's head? Because if this ultimately is only his dream, why this American Santa Claus? How does he know about Alien? How does he know? By the way, that was one of the best lines, I thought, in the episode.
Yeah.
It's like, you actually have horror movies about aliens. No wonder they keep invading you.
One of the things I really love was the fact that the actor who played Santa Claus, his name really is Nick Frost. And this isn't a thing, like, he doesn't specialize in playing Santa and changed his name to reflect that.
Uh-huh.
He's an actor named Nicholas Frost.
That is too funny.
And it just happened to Santa. I thought it was great.
So where does the name Nick Frost, the connection with Santa Claus come from?
Is well, that St. Nicholas, and then it's obviously a frosty time of year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so it's just a surname.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, but that's the actor's name. I just thought it was just funny that they found an actor named Nick Frost,
mm-hmm.
who was apparently a well-known British actor, to play Santa. And he did it so well. I just loved the tone. It was very much reminding me of from the British version of The Office.
Oh, yes, indeed. Yeah. I was thinking too. There were oh gosh, it's the same guy who is in Night at the Museum and everything.
Yeah. Now I'm Googling.
I'm blanking out as well.
where listeners may recognize Nick Frost from is from Simon Pegg movies, because he and Simon Pegg frequently play off of each other. He's in Shaun of the Dead and
That's
Hot
where
Fuzz
I know him from. Yes.
And The End of the World. Yes. Yeah.
The actor we're trying to think of is Ricky Gervais.
Of course. Ricky Gervais. Yeah. And it was especially in his, hold on, time out. And he uses kind of that same tone that that we know from the British version of The Office. I also really liked how they touched upon a lot of different Christmas traditions, both the American imagery, but also these typical British customs that we don't even have in the rest of Europe, It's like the Christmas crackers and the Christmas hats.
Christmas crowns, yeah.
And that's all stuff that I'm not familiar with. But
particularly British cultural. And it's really kind of neat. This is one of the things I love about Doctor Who is this glimpse into these particular glimpses into British culture that, we can recognize, especially if we've read anything, any literature, British literature. But you kind of get this glimpse into this culture that's very much like ours as Americans, but is different. And I really enjoy that aspect. I think it adds somewhat for my enjoyment of Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
We should also mention, because Father Roderick is here, that the Dutch have made a significant contribution to the Santa Claus imagery.
Absolutely.
Because the typical image that we have in America is derived in part from A Night Before Christmas, or 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, which that poem is influenced by the Santa Claus imagery that was developed in New York.
Indeed.
Back when it was still New Amsterdam. And even the name Santa Claus is from the Dutch Sinterklaas.
Yes, which is from St. Nicholas.
Yeah.
And it's still a huge, vibrant tradition in the Netherlands. Actually, to just insert a short plug, I created 3 videos about the Dutch Santa Claus tradition on YouTube, and you can find that on tridio.com. So it's like video, but then Tridio. And we've subtitled them in English. So if you want to take a look at what this Sinterklaas tradition looks like in the Netherlands and how that evolved into Santa Claus. You definitely want to give it just check it out, and we'll include a link to those videos in the show notes. But it's
one thing I really liked with there were some lines of dialogue that I really enjoyed with the on Clara's roof. One of them, and they actually played with this a few times in the episode, was the elves being hypersensitive to racism. And anything yes. connected, any remark about the fact that they're elves was perceived as some kind of racist remark. And then I liked how they tried to turn it around on Clara and referred to her as human.
Yeah.
And then they realized, oh, she doesn't care if we do that.
They don't mind. These humans don't know that we talk down to them.
Also, I thought there was a really great line when the doctor is verbally sparring with Santa Claus and demands to know how his bag can contain so many gifts for everyone all over the world.
Oh,
he says, it's bigger on the inside.
And then the elves are like, ooh, that's a good one.
And he calls him Beardy Weirdy at one point.
Yeah, all that Beardy Weirdy stuff. Which ultimately, in the end, when you know that this is all happening in the doctor's dream, kind of makes sense that they make those jokes. Because otherwise, how do they know about the doctor, about the TARDIS, about it being bigger on the inside? It's brilliant. I was wondering, one split second, I was thinking of the moment where the doctor wakes up from his dream, and both in the last dream and the one before that, he seems to be on this kind of volcano type environment, and it made me think of that other dream that was in the episode where Clara is throwing away the keys. Remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we're meant to understand, at least we're meant to be faked out for a moment, that we've returned to that moment in time.
That's what I was thinking. I think they're playing with that. They try to make us believe that the rumors that we heard all year long that this would be the final season with Clara, that was actually going to happen. We're going back there, and it's going to be the final farewell. That's what I was really thinking at the end. I was really getting nervous. I was like, no, please.
The rumors, at least at present, is that that was the case, and that this was originally written to be Clara's farewell. And I guess if that was true, she would have parted with the doctor as the elderly woman. But then Jenna Coleman decided to stay either for another half season or another full season, and they quickly tacked on the happy ending so that they didn't have the bittersweet ending of her being an old woman.
I'm so glad that was a happy ending.
You know, it's very interesting that they decided to do these two dream state sort of motifs in these successive episodes, and this idea of, I don't, they play with perception a lot. I mean, you think of a couple of the big baddies that they've had over the last few years. You know, the Weeping Angels. When you see them, they don't move. When you don't see them, they move.
Yeah.
Or the Silence, who you forget them when you don't see them. Or there was a third one.
Looking back. You know, you can't look at
there's
them.
There's the Hyde aliens.
The Hyde aliens. There was one other one. But anyway, they're often playing with the idea of perception and what you just can't see, and you know, if you're not looking in the right place. And I think that's something that Moffat really loves to play with, especially in the episodes he writes, with the idea of what's just outside our perception. Are we aware of a greater world or things that are just beyond? And for him, it's what's scary out there.
And in this, we have the dream crabs that are only dangerous if you're thinking about them.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Which leads to that hilarious intro of the girl, you know, dancing to that very British Christmas song, which we hear on the radio here every year. It's like a daily song that you hear all the time.
So, Merry Christmas, Everybody by Slade. Apparently.
Yes. Yes. But I just love the craziness of that dance sequence. It's like I don't remember having ever seen a dance sequence like that in Doctor Who. And by the way, I really liked all those actors in the. At first, I thought that was actually a space station, and then later on, you get the explanation that that's the North Pole. And then, there's another great joke. It's when they show the photo of the North Pole, and it's truly a pole on the on the mobile phone. Yeah, and of course, it's stripy because then at least you can see that it's turning around.
Well, you know, speaking of those actors, the actor Bellows, the older professor.
Mm-hmm.
Is played by Michael Troughton, who is the son of the second Doctor, Patrick Troughton.
How awesome.
So it was a little Doctor Who.
Well, and then the actor who plays Strax is also in there. He's one of the elves. Dan Starkey.
Right, so right. Was it Ian or Wolf? I think he's
Ian. And it's the I think it's one of the first times that we actually see him without the prosthetics. But right. He's been in a long time.
Probably got the ears.
Yeah, well, yes, indeed. But and speaking of prosthetics, I actually thought that they did a pretty good job with old Clara. Now it's television budget, so it's always it's very difficult to age a very young actress. But it looked a lot better than the old versions of the actors in Back to the Future too. It's just like, oh my gosh, they overshot it by 40 years at least. let's go back to let's go through chronologically a little bit to the various moments in this episode. Are there any like particular topics you want to bring up or things that we might have missed, hidden secrets in this episode?
Yeah, I would like to talk about like the Clara's list in Santa's notebook. I thought that was really neat. The idea of she had science kits, travel books, and a ban on hair products. Which really, you know, Clara, you know, science and travel. I mean, that's that nails her to the T for traveling with the Doctor. I mean, what's more perfect than that? So yeah. I found it very interesting to see that, and I wonder, you know, again, it was in her dream state. So is she projecting a little bit?
Well, and I didn't get the joke about the hair products.
I didn't either, but I may be the wrong gender.
I took that as just something thrown in, although it also may be meant to be ironic because clearly she's got great hair.
Yes. Oh, by the way, the chat room says that the North Pole being actually striped pole is taken from J.R.R. Tolkien. In his letters of Father Christmas, that's actually mentioned there.
Right.
So that's a cool little Tolkien reference. I love that.
One of the things that I really liked was Clara's initial dream sequence with Danny Pink under the influence of the crab.
Yeah.
because, okay, there was a lot of really scary stuff in that, but the kind of scary stuff, it wasn't like walking through a corridor being menaced by a monster. Instead, she was seeing these chalkboards, which are a symbol of the 12th Doctor because he's added those to the TARDIS now.
Yeah.
And she would like try to erase a word on the chalkboard and a new word would appear as she does that. And the whole sequence, as she keeps trying to erase the words, spells out a message telling her she's dying. And I thought that was very effective. I also like the fact that Dream Danny was the one who helped convince her to move on with her life, because that's true to who he was as a character and her memory of him. She's accurately recreated what the real Danny Pink would do in that situation.
Yeah.
Which would be to try to help her move on. I'll just note, we have a little bit of dangling continuity. I don't know that we've seen the last of Danny Pink, because if y'all will remember in the Listen episode where we saw the hiding aliens, or didn't see them, actually, we have his apparent future descendant,
Pink,
mm-hmm. who apparently is a descendant of Clara and Danny. And so I'm thinking we may not be done with Danny Pink yet.
Oh, true. Yeah. Actually family.
Well, the thing that kind of gets me about this scene in the dream is I thought to myself, is this the real Danny coming through from beyond, wherever the beyond is, the state that he's living in? Because it doesn't seem to be quite death, but another state mm-hmm. of being or something. I don't know. It's kind of amorphous the way they described it, but. You know, it sounded a lot like the real, like when he said, "I didn't die saving the world, Doctor. I died saving Clara." You know, mm-hmm. you know, it sounded very much like the real, like suddenly the real Danny broke through the dream Danny, who would be trying to keep Clara in.
Well, that's a good point. They might actually deliberately keep that ambiguous.
They also might not bring him back because, of course, time can be rewritten. But they've left, I think, the door open to mm-hmm. to doing something more with the character.
What do you think, Stephanie? You watch a lot of these television series, and in some of them are actually known for bringing back people that died and died again, and then it's a little bit of a trope also in some of, especially the kind of the lesser TV series. What would you think if they would bring back Danny?
I don't think I would want him back. He was a good character to bring on, but I think we could be finished with him.
Mm-hmm.
With them.
But then it would create the problem that they're, you know, it's just the Doctor and Clara. So, and there's always, well, at least in the newer Doctor Who, there's always been some kind of love interest or something that just adds something. I mean, what could they add to the mix to keep it interesting?
I don't know. I thought it was always rumored that he was going to be an additional companion, but now they have killed him off. It's obviously not going to happen. So I don't know what could happen in the future.
Do we actually know, is that a decision by the actor, or was it decided by the writers to just get rid of him? I also thought at the beginning of this season that he would be on board for at least two or three seasons, like previous companions had. What was it with what's the name of the guy?
Rory.
I mean, he's been around for quite a while, and I actually thought it was kind of cool to repeat that theme.
My understanding is that with Rory, he was brought on. I don't know that they had the plan initially to turn him into a companion, but he worked well enough that they did. In Danny's case, it was announced that he would be a recurring character, and fans assumed he would therefore be a companion.
Right,
but he technically he doesn't technically meet the definition because he doesn't travel with the Doctor in the TARDIS.
True. Yeah, he just pops up at the beginning or the end of an episode, and We kind of complained about that as well, that sometimes it felt like the relationship wasn't really evolving that much, and he seemed to be a little bit tacked on.
And too much like Mickey.
Yeah, yeah. However, I like that they brought him back and just gave him a final, farewell in this episode. Mm-hmm. Especially because he's been an important character in this season.
I know some people were upset that they brought Danny back in this way, like the Danny back from the dead, and not bring him back permanently. But, you know, actually, I kind of like this because the last time we saw him, he was encased in a Cyberman, and it wasn't the quote unquote the real Danny, the character that we would like. And now we get this closure as fans, as much as Clara gets one. there is a great line in that scene where, you know, the doctor's talking to Clara and he's like, he's not real, Clara. None of this is real. What's real is there's an alien organism wrapped around your face, keeping you warm. And he says, mince pie, anyone? That was such a great moment.
Let's take a very short break here, and I want to use the occasion to thank all our listeners that have helped out during our winter fund drive. As you know, we were asking for help of our listeners to continue to be able to podcast in this next year, especially paying the bills for hosting and the bandwidth and everything. And our listeners did, and it's awesome. We met our fundraising goal, and so we can pay the bills another year. And I just wanted to thank you all. And in case you want to continue to support us and help us out, then just check out sqpn.com. There is a button that goes to a donation page where if you like this show and you want to support us financially, then that's where you can find the information on how to do that. And it's also the place where you can find all our other shows. And there are many shows that you might like. And in 2015, we are going to launch even more exciting new programs, both audio and video. So there might be much more, you know, innovative Doctor Who stuff coming soon. I will say no more. That's all a surprise, but definitely keep an eye on sqpn.com. And again, thank you so much for, first of all, having listened to this show for an entire season. I hope you will be back for the next one. For all your feedback and support and the kind words on social networks, and then also for your financial support. We really think that we have an awesome audience, and it's a huge motivation to do what we do. All right, back to Santa. What was the other highlight for me of this particular episode was the whole alien thing, you know, and even the joke where they just name it, you know, this is a bit like the facehuggers. The what? The facehuggers. And then that very scary scene where Clara's underneath, what is it? The alien is above her and... She's trying
doing math sums.
Yeah, and then you have the
she's really good at math.
She is, yeah.
It was Danny's influence. He was the math teacher.
Oh, that could be it. Yeah.
I like the way in this the doctor referred to Danny, but now affectionately it seemed as PE, as a callback to previous taunts that he'd thrown at Danny, and in the same way he taunted Santa by wishing him happy Easter and things like that.
Yeah.
In fact, Easter was mentioned, I counted, 7 times in this episode. Yeah, and I thought that was interesting that they would, I mean, it's one thing to kind of, you threw it out as a taunt at once, but it kept coming up like, you know, Easter in various retorts in the conversation. I thought it was very funny, and you know, curious, you know, was it just meant to be, you know, there's the Easter bunny, you know, and then Danny talks about, what day is it? It's Easter Day. That's why I'm dressed like this. I'm Father Easter. You know, that sort of thing coming up. It was just a funny retort, kind of a Christmas and Easter as the two big holidays.
Well, that's good. I wonder, did they ever do like a proper like Easter-themed episode?
Not that I'm aware of. They have, traditionally, Doctor Who has debuted around Easter time. They've changed that up some in recent years, but it was kind of common for it, at least after the revival, for there to be a Christmas episode and then an Easter debut. And we may actually, I don't know, we might get that this year, or they may delay it until later in the year again.
Yeah, actually, so they might be setting it up that there is going to be like an Easter-themed episode. I mean, there's plenty of... symbols, etc., around Easter that they could work with, I guess.
I think it'd be a little harder because, they're already kind of struggling a little bit with the fact that Christmas is a Christian holiday, sure. And they don't want the show to be too explicitly Christian.
Uh-huh.
And I think it'd be even harder at Easter time to pull that off.
Well,
because
they could just stick with the eggs, for instance. I mean, you can do stuff with it.
You could put alien facehuggers in them, in fact. That would be an Easter episode.
Brightly colored facehuggers that pop out of Easter eggs.
One thing that I wondered is, because this episode is titled Last Christmas, now obviously that has a meaning within the episode itself of the last Christmas that people experience together. And this is, for example, Clara and Danny's last Christmas. And it could be that could have been the Doctor and Clara's last Christmas. But I wonder if there's a metatextual reference there as well, that maybe Moffat has decided he doesn't have any more ideas for Christmas specials that are worth doing. And maybe it's our last Christmas special of the Moffat era.
Could be. I actually took it to, as another pun to the Christmas music that you hear in Europe, at least on the radio, for weeks and weeks. And this is the number one Christmas hit. It's Wham, you know, Last Christmas.
Oh, is it? Okay. I wasn't aware of that. I don't even listen to American radio. So.
It is, it's the one of the most horrible Christmas songs, but they play it over and over and over again. I mean, if you ask people in the street, you know, name one modern Christmas song, people will say Last Christmas. So it's that was kind of my association as a European. It's referring to Wham.
You could well be right.
I don't know. Or there might be just, you know, several layers in this as well.
I think it was just tricking the fans into thinking that it was Clara's last.
That's what I was thinking, yeah. They were just playing with that farewell theme and, oh my gosh, this is going to be bittersweet and everything. But no. Which keeps me wondering, you know, were there other hidden jokes or references in here? Or sometimes there are echoes of previous episodes of Doctor Who. I mean, we have not seen these dream crabs before, have we?
No, these are new. We have had an episode that largely took place in dream form and that played with the question of whether or not a particular reality is that the characters find themselves in is real or a dream. That occurred in the first of the Matt Smith seasons in the episode Amy's Choice, where under the influence of what turns out to be psychic pollen, the Doctor's subconscious manifests as the Dream Lord and torments the Doctor and Amy and Rory, forcing Amy to make a choice between the Doctor and Rory. And I really enjoyed that episode. I thought the Dream Lord was a great character, and I'd love to see them do more with him, although I can understand it might be kind of hard to pull off an episode that good involving him again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another reference, it wasn't specifically an internal Doctor Who reference, but where Santa, you know, when they ask him, you know, so why you? Why are you the image that our subconscious has pulled out to save us? And he says, why me? It's the North Pole. It's Christmas Day. You're dying. Who are you going to call?
Yeah.
Like, Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters.
Out the TV.
I like that. I liked, and I mentioned it in my recap. I think there's a kind of, at least I can't swear to it, but I think there's a reference to the O. Henry story, Gift of the Magi. Because if you're not – now, that story came out in something like 1906. And if you're not familiar with it, what happens in it is you have a young couple who very much love each other, and they each sell something very important to them in order to be able to give a gift to – to their spouse. So the husband like has a pocket watch that he's very proud of, and he sells it in order to buy some combs for his wife's long, beautiful hair. And she sells her hair to a wig maker in order to buy a fob for his pocket watch. And so you have this kind of tragic, we both did something to help the other that's kind of moot now. Or has kind of been undercut. And I think you have the same thing where Clara lies to the Doctor, or admits that she lied to the Doctor in order to let him be happy on Gallifrey, and he lied about finding Gallifrey in order to let her be happy with Danny Pink. To me, it just echoes with Gift of the Magi.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
And that's the truth that lets them continue traveling together. I mean, they finally tell each other the truth. They've been in so many ways they've
good
lied to
point.
Each other.
Yes.
Oh. And this finally lets them tell the truth, and suddenly they can have that relationship that they had when it was Eleven and Clara, you know, when it was Matt Smith's Doctor and Clara, not so much in the romantic sense, but just in the sense of they can gallivant carefree, you know, through the cosmos, through space and time.
Good point.
They finally have told each other the truth.
Yeah.
And I had a reference. The other reference, like O. Henry's The Gift of the Magi, I felt like there was a bit of a Christmas Carol, a Dickens' A Christmas Carol in this too, where you have this, you know, I've woken and I haven't missed Christmas. You know, where Scrooge thinks, you know, I'm supposed to, you know, get a visitation from a ghost on three consecutive nights. And then when he finally wakes after the last one, it turns out it's actually still Christmas morning. And I haven't missed Christmas. And there's that real sense in this, you know, after the doctor wakes three times, essentially, and who's more Scrooge-like than the Doctor 12. it's still Christmas in a sense. And he runs off like Scrooge does at the end of A Christmas Carol. Spoiler, sorry. But you don't know A Christmas Carol by now. That's not a spoiler. You're just out of touch. you know, I just and so I really felt like that was a bit of that as well. Like, you know, we've touched on a bunch of different Christmas themes and stories and traditions and customs that it makes a real nice. It doesn't become a mess. It's actually just kind of all hangs together,
mm-hmm.
kind of like Christmas does.
There's actually a direct quote from A Christmas Carol. When they stand in a circle and they hold hands, and the doctor is very uncomfortable with the holding hands thing, which I think is just so in character.
Holding hand thing.
Yeah, I love that. as well as that also happens during the fantastic sleigh ride over London, which was just one of the highlights, I think, of this episode visually, when Clara embraces him. Sorry?
It needed a giant shark. It needed a giant flying shark in that scene. That's all I can say.
A shark? Why that?
Well, that's what we got for the parallel sequence at the end of A Christmas Carol, was the doctor driving a sleigh being pulled by a giant flying shark.
Oh, of course. Yeah. But so when they hold hands, one of the characters says, one of the scientists says, God blesses everyone, which is actually the same thing that Tiny Tim says in Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. There was also a reference to a scene in The Time of the Doctor, where it's the 11th Doctor who's very old, and then it is... is it Clara? No, it should be someone else. Who actually, you know, helps him with the cracker. Mm-hmm. And in this episode, it's the opposite. It's the doctor helping old Clara to pull that Christmas cracker. And I still don't know how that works, the whole Christmas cracker thing. Is that supposed to explode or something? Or
I believe so, yeah.
Oh, really? But it doesn't.
One reference that was a cultural reference rather than necessarily something else in the show is at one point Santa uses like a keychain to park Rudolph.
And
you get the kind of noise that awesome. Those make with your car, and Rudolph's red nose goes off.
Yes.
And I thought that was really nice. The doctor has done something similar with the TARDIS also.
Oh, yeah, I remember. Oh, those are the really great gags, almost cartoonish, but it works because the guy who played Nick Frost, the actor who plays Santa Claus, just such a terrific job to be this over the top, you know, archetypical Santa Claus, and you believe everything he does. It just works. Did you also see that the TARDIS in the opening titles had snow on it?
Mm-hmm.
I love those little details.
Snowflakes, too, that were around. Instead of the Gallifreyan script, there were snowflakes on some of the stuff flying around, too, in the opening credits.
It's awesome. I hope they're going to continue to kind of change those titles. And I'm pretty sure that doesn't the music and the opening sequence change kind of gradually every season?
Well, not necessarily every season. It's remained the same for stretches of years at a time, but they have been playing with it a little bit, or at least with the opening credits in the Peter Capaldi series. I don't know that they're going to top, though, the episode for the opening credits for Death in Heaven, where Clara had just announced that Clara Oswald was a fiction and in reality she was the Doctor. And then they introduced her first in the opening credits with her eyes instead of Peter Capaldi's eyes. I mean, that's just wonderful.
I'm also thinking of certain references to horror movies and science fiction movies that were in this episode. So obviously, of course, the face huggers and then the slime that falls down on Clara and she starts screaming out of terror.
That's also from Alien.
Yeah, definitely from Alien, although the slime there is like hyper, you know,
it's
acidic and it bites through, you know, burns through through metal floors. There was also the moment, which I thought was really scary, where since that's a horror dream, the zombie, you know, face-hugged dreamers actually reach out through the television screens. Mm-hmm. And that was so much like, is it The Ring? Or there's several horror movies where that happens, where, you know, the television screen is just suddenly turning into 3D and people reach out through the screen.
Well, it also reminded me of that episode where Amy is trapped inside the spaceship and there's the Weeping Angels on the monitor. And it's getting closer and closer, and suddenly it's in the spaceship with her.
Oh yeah, I remember. I
forget. We also had the episode Fear Her, where you had an alien menace that inhabited TVs.
Mm.
Right, I just watched that one. Yeah, with the coronation of Queen Elizabeth. They went back to the 50s, and it was sucking up people's faces, making them blank.
You know, scenes like that really creep me out because I watched Poltergeist when I was a kid. And after that, I never dared to turn on the TV anymore.
They're here.
Oh, especially when there's, you know, there's no transmit. Nowadays, there's always something on. But in my days as a kid, that oftentimes after midnight, there would be nothing on the television. I just didn't dare to turn it on anymore.
Yeah, now kids aren't going to know what visual static looks like.
Yeah, true.
Get a blue screen or a channel.
Uh-huh. What?
The screen test, the tone
test pattern
the test pattern right.
Yeah, isn't that in the United States something with like an Indian on it, like I remember that from old movies.
Yeah, when I was a kid they had that, then they shifted in I guess the 70s to commonly using a series of color bars.
Yeah that's what we had too.
One movie that we haven't mentioned that this episode plays on is the 1950s movie The Thing from Another World. In that, you have an Arctic base that's under siege by an extraterrestrial menace. And the extraterrestrial menace in that case was played by James Arnaz, Matt Dillon from Gunsmoke, except he was playing a giant carrot man who killed people and drank their blood.
Wow.
But that movie kind of was one of the inspirations for Alien. And they kind of brought aspects of The Thing from Another World back in this one whereas Alien, you know, you've got the facehuggers and things, it's not set at an Arctic base. But this is.
Yeah.
And so,
wow.
In fact, if you look, apparently when the character Shona wakes up and she's looking at the end of the episode and she's looking at her Christmas Day itinerary.
It's on the list.
She's planned to watch several movies, including Alien, The Thing from Another World, and Miracle on 34th Street, which, of course, involves Santa Claus.
And the Game of Thrones marathon, which I'm not sure how that fits in.
Yeah. Isn't Ghostbusters on that list also?
I don't think so.
But at the end of the list, this is a question I had because I didn't understand this reference that says forgive Dave ? And she checks it off. Who's Dave?
just some guy in her life, I guess.
It was very random. I was wondering if maybe there's some internal logic that I missed or some trivia, but I guess we'll never know.
Yeah, I was wondering that too. And so who is Dave and why should he be forgiven? I'm just Googling it right now because I'm sure that other people have asked the same question. But
it's my thought is they threw it in to give us a sense of closure with her and go out on a happy note, because if she checks it off, she's going to do it. And that's how I would take it. She's just had this adventure. She's in this very disoriented state. They want to give us a positive out note. And so they communicate to us she's going to forgive this guy for Christmas.
You know, I had a thought, which was, you know, Moffat is known for dropping hints of future plots in his episodes. Maybe we'll see Shona again, and this will be part of that plot, that episode.
Yeah, that
something with this
Moffat
guy Dave
still needs to explain why yeah, he needs to be forgiven for.
Dave's not here.
Could be.
Actually, I really like the character of Shona. As a character, as an actress, the way she played it, I thought it was very sparkly, very bright, funny, mm-hmm. And it just worked well. It just the others have kind of could be anyone, you know. But
I'll mark you, Santa. You know, there was I want to make sure I highlight some of my favorite lines because they were so good. There was that interaction with the doctor and Santa, where the doctor says, no, line in the sand, Santa Claus does not do the scientific explanation. And mm-hmm. Santa says, all right, as a doctor might say. And then he puts on this outrageous Scottish accent, oh, it's all a bit threemy-weemy.
Yes.
It's awesome. But there's just, again, there's a lot of that great repartee, that great. He does actually. The doctor throws out a one-liner, which that's why I was missing. It was he, you know, as they're leaving, you know, oh, you know, things are solved now, and Clara's like, how's it solved? The dream crabs are still there. Oh, no need for chat, and you only get attached. This isn't Facebook.
Yes,
that was awesome. You know, and then right after that, the doctor, you know, when he runs back in, he says, dreams, they're funny, ha ha ha, they're disjointed, they're silly, they're full of gaps. And as I was watching, I'm like, yeah, kind of like this plot was. You know, that was a thought I'd been thinking about. I was like, there's all kinds of gaps in this plot. There's all kinds of, like, holes. Like, why did the doctor take Clara from the rooftop? And he seemed to know exactly what was going on the rooftop. But when they get to the North Pole, they seemed kind of surprised. And I felt like there was all these holes, and it was very disjointed. And it turns out that's intentional. It was intended to be a clue that this is a dream and dreams are like that. So I thought that was a very clever way to kind of to wrap that around and to connect that again.
Yeah. Or that was just Moffat hanging a lantern on otherwise choppy writing.
Well, that too, probably. No, but I really liked all the references to time being different in a dream, like internal dream logic. I mean, I have dreams like that where it totally makes sense, and then you wake up and you think back and you're like, how on earth was I okay with that happening in my dream? You know, that doesn't make sense.
They've played, incidentally, with dream time before in Silence in the Library and Forest of the Dead, the original introduction of River Song, because in that pair of episodes, Donna Noble is taken into mentally into a computer matrix and experiences a virtual existence. And it's pointed out to her while she's experiencing that time is moving like it does in a dream. Mm-hmm. So you suddenly leap forward to the next event that's significant without experiencing all the boring stuff in between.
Yeah.
Apparently, other people dream differently than I do because I get all the boring stuff.
I either dream like the entire day in advance, where it's like I go to mass, I preach, I greet my parishioners, I go to the second mass, and then I greet my parishioners, and then I wake up and I'm thinking, shoot, it's Sunday morning, I still have to do all that. Or I have these wild dreams where it's like being in a science fiction movie, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I woke up before I know what's going to happen next.
My dreams never have any correspondence to reality at all. I mean, they're just so bizarre. they're just clearly not reality. I would never get stuck in a dream state because this is clearly not reality. You know, when the doctor at the end is driving that sleigh, you know, he takes the reins, you know, St. Nick gives him a chance at driving the sleigh. And he just had so much joy. This was as much fun as we've seen the, you know, 12 have, you know, as the doctor in this series. It was very much, I think, another one of those significant moments where the doctor has changed. The doctor is different from, you know, that doctor we saw in Into the Dalek and you know, those early episodes. He's very different now and has a lot of that fun.
Yes.
He's crotchety, but he's got a lot of that fun back.
He's got less of the Scottish, like, I'm angry, I'm Scottish, I can disagree.
Yes.
He seems to be, you know, more of an adventurer now. And that's kind of perhaps also because of that you know, new freedom, because he, you know, he told the truth and Clara told the truth, and there's kind of like a new start that is now possible. Speaking of which, the next season, we now know what the title is of the first episode of the next season. And I assume they're actually going to start, you know, working on the new season very soon. So that's going to be an exciting time following all the rumors. And finally, I'm like completely up to date now with Doctor Who, which I've never been before. So we can actually try to second guess what's going to happen next season. But the title of the first episode of the new season is called The Magician's Apprentice. Any theories as to what that means?
I think it's going to involve Clara alone in the TARDIS chopping broomsticks in half, but with them carrying buckets of water.
That might very well be the case. I don't know.
You know, at one point in this episode, Shona, you know, refers to the Doctor as a magician.
A magician, yes.
As his outfit.
And isn't his costume also kind of based on that?
I think that was the idea. She kind of says, you look like a magician. You know, you this is coming from a magician. And I think that must be, you know, a connection. That's my guess, is it's a connection to Clara being the magician's apprentice.
Yeah. Anyway, I can't wait to see what they're going to come up with next season. But for our listeners, you'll have to wait a while before we get back to discussing new episodes of Doctor Who. But in the meantime, please stay subscribed, because you never know what's going to happen in between now and the start of the next season. We have a great love for Doctor Who that might materialize in more discussions, or perhaps even some other productions over at the StarQuest Production Network. So stay subscribed to SQPN, or to this podcast, and keep an eye on sqpn.com. And in the meantime, of course, all our hosts are also involved in other productions on the web. Stephanie, let me start with you, because you are actually celebrating an important anniversary.
Yes, I just recorded yesterday episode 200 of TV Rewind.
Wow.
Had a whole panel of guests that were on there. It was really fun to record.
Fantastic. I mean, getting to 100 as a podcaster is already very rare. Most podcasters don't get there, but to get to 200, that is awesome. So congratulations. So again, for listeners that might not know you from previous episodes, but it's a podcast that is dedicated to television shows, right?
Yes.
And you discuss a lot of series that you are following, and sometimes you will just stop following certain television series because they're not good enough. And so, you know that the shows that Stephanie talks about on her show, that those are worth watching. So, where can people find the podcast?
TVRewindPodcast.com.
Excellent. What about you, Jimmy?
People can catch up with all the stuff I do at jimmyakin.com, and that includes my podcast. If you want to go directly to the podcast, you can go to jimmyakinpodcast.com.
And you also have a blog about Doctor Who, which is something that you can occupy the next month reading all that.
I've got Let's Watch Doctor Who. It's an effort at rewatching Doctor Who from the beginning, although I have to say I haven't been able to update it recently because I've been focused on other things, but I'll get back to it.
And it's what's there is very much worth your time. It's just a great archive. The BBC should hire you.
If the offer is good, we can talk.
Excellent. What about you, Dom?
Well, the Secrets of Doctor Who, we may be a little quiet for a while, but in the next 11 months, the Secrets of Star Wars podcast at SQPN.com is going to be very busy, right, Father? Because
yes.
There's going to be a lot of news to talk about as we approach this new Star Wars movie.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure to subscribe and listen. If you're a science fiction fan, a Star Wars fan, we take it apart every rumor that we could find.
Absolutely. And I'm on that same show as well as on many other SQPN podcasts. Just go to sqpn.com and just browse around and try some shows out. And I'm sure you'll find something to your liking. All right. Thank you so much for listening to our discussion of the Christmas episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Again, as I mentioned before, stay subscribed. We will be back. Take care.
When will I see you again?
Soon, I expect. Or later. One of those.